chunk of Joshua that we didn't preach on. There's a large section in the middle of the book that is basically describing the division of the land. It's fairly redundant. It wasn't to them, I'm sure, because it described each particular tribe and the land that they received. But I thought it'd be pretty difficult to pull some sermons out of that, so we skipped it. And last week we dealt with the last few verses of chapter 21. Today we come to Joshua chapter 22. It's a lengthy text, but I will read all 34 verses. So if you have your Bibles open, you could follow along. Then Joshua summoned the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh and said to them, "You have done all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded them, and you have obeyed me in everything I commanded. For a long time now, to this very day, you have not deserted your brothers, but have carried out the mission the Lord your God gave you. Now that the Lord your God has given your brothers rest as he promised, return to your homes in the land that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave to you on the other side of the Jordan. But be very careful to keep the commandments and the law of Moses that the servant of the Lord gave you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to obey his commands, to hold fast to him and serve him with all your heart and soul." Then Joshua blessed them and sent them away, and they went to their homes. To the half-tribe of Manasseh, Moses had given the land of Bashan, and to the other half, the tribe, Joshua gave the land on the west side of the Jordan with their brothers. When Joshua sent them home, he blessed them, saying, "Return to your homes with great wealth, with large herds of livestock, with silver, gold, bronze, and iron, and a great quantity of clothing, and divide with your brothers the plunder from your enemies." So the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh left the Israelites at Shiloh in Canaan and returned to Gilead, their own land, which they had acquired in accordance with the command of the Lord through Moses. When they came to Gileoth, near the Jordan, in the land of Canaan, the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh built an imposing altar there by the Jordan. And when the Israelites heard that they had built an altar on the border of Canaan at Gileoth near the Jordan on the Israelite side, the whole assembly of Israel gathered at Shiloh to go to war against them. So the Israelites sent Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the priest, to the land of Gilead, to Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. With him they sent 10 of the chief men, one from each of the tribes of Israel, each head of a family division according to the Israelite clans. When they went to Gilead, to Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, they said to them, "The whole assembly of the Lord says, 'How could you break faith with the God of Israel like this? How could you turn away from the Lord and build yourselves an altar in rebellion against him now? Was not the sin of Peor enough for us? Up to this very day we have not cleansed ourselves from that sin, even though a plague fell upon the community of the Lord. And now you're turning away from the Lord? If you rebel against the Lord today, tomorrow he'll be angry with the whole community of Israel. And if you possess, and if the land you possess is defiled, come over to the Lord's land. There the Lord's tabernacle stands, and share the land with us. Do not rebel against the Lord or against us by building an altar for yourselves other than the altar of the Lord our God." When Achan the son of Zerah acted unfaithfully according to the devoted things, did not wrath come upon the whole community of Israel? He was not the only one who died for his sin. Then Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh replied to the heads of the clans of Israel, "The mighty one of God, the Lord, the mighty one of God, the Lord, he knows, and let Israel know, if this has been done in rebellion or disobedience to the Lord, do not spare us this day. If we have built our own altar to turn away from the Lord and to offer burnt offerings and grain offerings or sacrifice fellowship offerings on it, may the Lord himself call us to account. No, we did it for fear that someday your descendants might say to ours, 'What do you have to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? The Lord has made the Jordan a boundary between you and us. You Reubenites and Gadites, you have no share in the Lord, so your descendants might cause us to stop fearing the Lord.' That is why we said, 'Let us get ready and build an altar, not for burnt offerings or sacrifices. On the contrary, it is to be a witness between us and you and the generations that follow, that we will worship the Lord at this sanctuary with our burnt offerings, sacrifices, and fellowship offerings. Then in the future, your descendants will not be able to say to ours, "You have no share in the Lord."' And we said, 'If they ever say this to us or to our descendants, we will answer, "Look at this replica of the Lord's altar, which our fathers built, not for burnt offerings and sacrifices, but as a witness between us and you. Far be it from us to rebel against the Lord and turn away from Him today by building an altar for burnt offerings, grain offerings, and sacrifices other than the altar, the Lord our God, that stands before His tabernacle. When Phinehas the priest and the leaders of the community and the heads of the clans of Israelites heard what Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh had to say, they were pleased. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, said to Reuben and Gad and Manasseh, "Today we know that the Lord is with us, because you have not acted unfaithfully toward the Lord in this manner. Now you have rescued the Israelites from the Lord's hand." Then Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, and the leaders returned to Canaan from their meeting with the Reubenites, Gadites, and Gilead, and reported to the Israelites. And they were glad to hear the report, and praised God. And they talked no more about going to war against them to devastate the country where the Reubenites and Gadites lived. And the Reubenites and Gadites gave the altar this name, "A witness between us that the Lord is God." Well, it was time for those eastern tribes to return home. They had fulfilled their obligation. Remember, Moses required them, and they pledged themselves to fight for the tribes on the west of the Jordan until they were at rest. Last week we saw that they were at rest. The Lord had fulfilled His promises, and now it was time for them to return to the land that Moses had given them. Their commitment to this endeavor was quite commendable and shows a real sense of brotherhood that they had between the tribes. And that would not always be the case. Later in the history of Israel, there would be some real contention and out-and-out warfare between one tribe and another. But at this point, there's a deep sense of unity, a sense of camaraderie, a sense of a national belonging together. So they build this altar. They build it at Gilead. We don't know where that is. And the word actually may mean the region of the Jordan. So it doesn't give us a whole lot of help to determine where it is. We know it's near the Jordan somewhere. And when I first read through it, it didn't register that they built it on the Israelite side. I thought they crossed over the river and built it on their side. No, it was built on the west side of the Jordan, on the Israelite side. And it says it's an imposing altar. The impression that the text gives that it was something big and that you could probably see it a long way off. This big altar standing there by the river. Well, what was the problem? The problem was that they were forbidden to erect altars like that in some place, anywhere they chose to slap up an altar and there have a center of worship. That was forbidden. We read in Deuteronomy 12, but you are able to seek the place the Lord your God will choose for you from among your tribes to put His name there for His dwelling. To that place you must go. There, bring your burnt offerings and sacrifices, your tithes and special gifts, what you have vowed to give, and your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herds and flocks. Jumping down, he says, be careful not to sacrifice your burnt offerings anywhere you please. Offer them only at the place the Lord will choose, in one of your tribes, and there observe everything I command you. So here's this altar, a big one, an imposing one, and it's unsanctioned by God. Now, at this point in Israel's history, the primary center where the tabernacle was in the environs of Shechem, near the Mounts Ebal and Gerizim, somewhere in that area. The tabernacle was, the altar was, and they established this altar apart from that one. Seriously forbidden. Now, the bad news of this offense came back to the other tribes. And it was not received very well. That was major bad news, and they said, all right, let's get ready for war. We're going to go wipe these guys out. They're not going to get away with this. And as they talk to each other, they're saying, wasn't the worship of Baal at Peor bad enough? 24,000 people died in a plague because of that. God's gonna nail the whole nation because of this sin if we allow it to go on. Remember Achan? The whole nation suffered because of Achan's sin. This is probably bigger and worse than what Achan had done. So they're saying to themselves, we got to do something. We can't let this stand. So they prepare for war against the offending tribes, and they assemble themselves. But decide to send this delegation first. So they didn't shoot first and ask questions later. They decided that if it was possible, maybe there was a peaceful solution. So they went to investigate and to rebuke the others for this altar they built. So the delegation was chosen. Phinehas was the leader, and then one from each of the other western tribes went over to talk to them, to see what was going on with this altar. And that provides a great example for us, doesn't it? Let's not shoot first, ask questions later. Let's not proceed with our assumptions as though it were absolute truth before we actually find out the facts or find out the thought process of our opponent. We can cause a lot of conflict by just running ahead like that. Or we can take something that's a low conflict and blow it totally out of proportion because we're functioning on assumptions rather than facts. So it's a good example for us here of how to proceed when a conflict arises. Now, most of the time for us, the thing that makes an argument get out of hand is not the actual facts of the argument. It's what you bring to the argument. It's your baggage. It's your position that you intend to defend. It's what causes it to get really difficult. So let's learn from Phinehas and his delegation. Let's investigate before we fire the first shot, and things will work a lot better for us, I would believe. Well, the resolution then. They declare to them that this was not an act of rebellion. They explain themselves and said, you know, it isn't as it appears. Yeah, it's a big altar, but it's not an altar of sacrifice. We have no intention, they say, of burning offerings here or offering up fellowship offerings or everything else. Essentially, you can hear them saying, we're well aware of that prohibition of not having any other altars. We know that. And we're not rising up in rebellion against the authority of God here. And they stress that several times. Far be it from us to rebel against the Lord in this way. So this was, as they called it, an altar of witness. So if ever the Westerners tried to bar them from crossing the Jordan to come over to worship, they could point to the altar and saying, see this? It's a replica of the true altar. And this proves that our forefathers, when they came across to dwell in this land over here, established this altar to prove that we do have a share in Yahweh, not just you guys on the west side. So it was a bold statement of their intention to be faithful, was it not? They go to the effort to build this altar so that they would never be prohibited from crossing back over to go and worship. They always wanted that avenue to be open to them, to go to where God would eventually set His name and worship Him there properly at the appropriate and genuine altar. Now, this is very similar. We talked about them before here in Joshua, the idea of pillars and memorials that were established. Remember that at the Jordan, they established two pillars, one in the middle of the river and one at Gilgal, where they stacked up the stones so they remember that event. Again, this is a structure to help them remember, to stand as a witness against the Westerners, saying, no, we have every right to come across and worship Jehovah. It was also, I think, a wonderful statement of faith for them that it was worth taking this risk in order to establish this altar of witness, because they so believed in God at that point. Now, it is disheartening, isn't it, as we think of their continued history and how thoroughly they fell away. Even the very next generation began going after Baal and other false gods. But at this point, their hearts were right. They loved God, and they wanted the ability to worship Him and that ability to continue for generations to come. Well, what about our altars? Kids, let me talk to you a little bit. What do you think about most throughout the week? Think about schoolwork most of the time?
Others of you might think about sports most of the time. Who's winning what? Or where can we go play? Something like that. Some of you girls might think about boys. Some of you boys might think about girls. Or maybe you think about being really strong. Maybe just think about video games. I don't know. I don't know what to think about. But something occupies your mind throughout the week. You think about stuff. Those things, even though they might not necessarily be wrong in and of themselves, if they start eating up so much of our time that we're not thinking about other things, they become like building your own special altar. You start to worship that stuff. It's the most important thing to you in your life. And God's the only one that's supposed to do that. So unless you are thinking about God, thinking about what Jesus did for you, thinking about what Jesus died for you, and all you do is think about all this other stuff, it's like building your own altar and worshiping another God. So it's really important to make sure that your thoughts throughout the week, not just here on Sunday, but throughout the week, turn your thoughts and think about the Lord. Think about what He did for you. Think about how wonderful and complete Jesus' death and resurrection was for you. But otherwise, it's like building your own altar. That's not the bad thing. Keep that in mind.
What about the rest of us? It's not just the kids, is it, that build their own altars? We do it too. And those altars that we build in our minds tend to lead us away, in our thinking at least, from the only real and true atonement. We create all sorts of shrines and altars of worship, and worship centers apart from the only one that God had established. We can worship our personal agenda. We can defend our schedule as though it were something sacred. Many of us bow before our demand to be approved or appreciated, far more often than we bow before the altar of God. Some are groveling in the temple of power and control every day. Others have committed their lives to pleasure, seeking the next physical high. Some of us are so committed to peace that we never actually deal with the important issues before us. We tend to let everything kind of slide by because we worship at the altar of peace. So where have you bowed yourself this past week? Where were you worshiping? What's the most imposing altar standing in your life? What are you sacrificing all sorts of time for throughout your week? What captures your attention day after day? Ponder that. But in that context, also ponder the final altar. The only altar that God acknowledges anymore is the cross of Jesus Christ. There, the perfect, final sacrifice was made, once for all, final, done, can't be repeated. God acknowledges that altar. God acknowledges the sacrifice that was made on that altar. Any turning away from it is turning from light and truth to falsehood and darkness. And we'll never find a good way in our lives as we turn away from the light. So all we need to be in a good and proper relationship with God is to be in Christ because of all the work that He has done. By being in Him, His work is reckoned as ours. His righteous deeds, His resistance to temptation, His marvelous prayers, His adoration of the Father, His total trust in the Father, His death for sin, His resurrection, His ascension, all are mine and yours if you're in Him. Therefore, we're declared righteous in God's sight, and we're positionally seated with Christ in heaven because of the work done at that altar. That altar is the altar to which every other legitimate altar in the past pointed forward to. The altar of the cross of Christ, where the only absolute sacrifice was ever made. So do you see the folly of turning to anything else? Christ and Christ alone. He did it all. We can add nothing to His finished work. We can't even add a sliver to our own salvation. So rest in Him. Acknowledge the depth of His forgiveness for you and the magnitude of His salvation. May you meditate on Him and raise up an altar of witness to the excellence of His perfect redemption. Let's come and meet Him at His table, not His altar.